This is Ozarks at Large for Thursday, July 8th, 2021 on your public radio station, 91.3 KUAF. Ahead this hour, a new study from the American Heart Association indicates transgendered people may suffer poorer cardiovascular health because of discrimination. More about that in about 10 minutes on the show. After today's Ozarks on Here and Now, blues great Bobby Rush toured for decades before he had his first hit record. He was 83 when he won his first Grammy. His story, as well as all of the day's top news on Here and Now, beginning at 1. The number of new cases of COVID-19 in Arkansas indicates the pandemic is anything but over in the state. The Arkansas Department of Health reports 1,000 new cases in the last 24 hours of testing, the highest single-day increase in cases in Arkansas since February. Another 7 deaths from the virus have been counted. Active cases increased by nearly 550 in the last 24 hours, and hospitalizations, after Tuesday's gain of 55, increased by another 16 patients yesterday. The ADH reports still fewer than 40% of Arkansans 12 and older are fully immunized. Partly cloudy conditions tonight with lows from 70 to 75, mostly sunny tomorrow with highs from 90 to 94, with possible heat index readings as high as 100 in the Arkansas River Valley tomorrow afternoon. This is Ozarks at Large. Thanks for being with us on this Thursday. A Fayetteville church this week is hosting a summer day camp for LGBTQ youth called Queer Camp. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich visits the camp to bring us this story.
A bunch of campers spray graffiti and glitter on parking lot spaces in the forested Good Shepherd Lutheran Church campus this late summer afternoon.
Wait, can I have the blue now?
Inside the sprawling timber and rock-constructed church complex commons, more kids chill before their next activity. Each day is mapped out with birding, yoga, life skills, chaos ball, dance, and queer youth theater.
The two princesses forsake their families and carve out a simple life for themselves as innkeepers in Medina. Tradition thrown out the window, but at least you're happy.
Campers can opt to make drag queen paper dolls, learn tie-dye, and queer filmmaking. There's also a course in self-care taught in the atrium by camp counselor Janelle Ezel.
Hi, we're doing a self-care. So we have nail stuff if you want to do a manicure, pedicure, you want to do a mud mask. We have to, you know, keep masks on. We don't want to, you know, we want to be safe for everything. So instead, what we're going to do is just a good overall false lash demonstration. So everyone gets their set of lashes. We're going to teach everyone how to put it on. I think that one day we also have someone bringing in some clothes. We're going to do a fashion show.
The busy camp canteen provides lunch and dinner every day.
I'm Jesse. My pronouns are he, him, and we're making spaghetti pie for dinner right now.
Hungry campers congregate in cliques nearby watching and waiting. 93 children signed up for queer camp ages 12 to 18. But camp director Connor Newsom-Doyle says kids were not asked to declare any particular identity.
So we don't actually know that. That was one of the things that we early on decided we didn't want to ask because there might be some campers who maybe don't feel fully ready to express that to their parents or guardians. And so it was, you can come to queer camp as you are, and we're not going to cut it off because you're not openly identifying. Because, we didn't want to be exclusionary in any way.
Meaning not rejecting any youth who are questioning their gender. Here, they're free to explore that realm. Doyle says a dozen parents are serving as camp counselors, along with 18 activity leaders in charge of 5 activity buckets.
The fine art category, performance art, outdoor education, recreation, and hair and styling.
Every morning, first thing, campers meet in small self-led empowerment groups, facilitated by Joanna Pointer.
This is a population of kids who typically don't get this kind of support in like a public school setting or even a private school setting.
Spouse Ashley Pointer is assisting
what we want to provide for the camp is to just build that confidence, build a connection for each other, give resources that know that it's not even just here isolated at this camp. There are other things in the area and that we can provide and be a part of.
Milo Newman, who identifies as he, it, is 12.
I'm gay. I'm gay, and I really want to make a lot of gay friends. And it's just, to me, it's cool to have a lot of, like, queer friends that you relate to. And also, it's like a summer camp, and I really like summer camp. Yeah.
Okay. My name is Timothy Newman, and I am Milo's father. I first heard about queer camp from a member of the church. We are not members of the church. And a member of the church suggested that we check it out because it might be a safe space to identify as queer openly and make friends. My pronouns, he, him. We are not Christian ourselves. And, you know, coming back to a Christian church was a very big step for both my partner and I. And being welcome with our queer identities was, like I said, it was crucial for our attendance, you know. Like, if we cannot be open, then there's no reason for us to come.
No religion classes are offered at queer camp, says Pastor Clint Schneckloth, which is intentional. He's a longtime LGBTQ advocate.
Well, right. We have been a essentially an outpost, kind of hopefully safe space for LGBTQ church in Arkansas for quite a while. But there's a difference between saying you're welcoming and actually designing space with a community in mind. And I would say this is the first time we've truly landed at something that really tells people, this has you in mind. This is like literally for you. And so, yeah, that's definitely part of our mission because that's who we want to be as the people of God.
Dozens of secular camps for LGBTQ plus kids operate across the country, but only a few faith-based camps exist, especially in the South. That's according to Ross Murray. He hosts a non-denominational Christian camp, The Naming Project, every summer in rural Minnesota since 2003. He's authored a new guidebook titled Made Known Loved, Developing LGBTQ Inclusive Youth Ministry. He spoke to us from New York.
Seeing what is happening in Arkansas and recognizing that there needs to be a set apart space, a safe haven, a sanctuary for young LGBTQ youth, especially this year for young folks that are feeling battered on all sides.
Murray's referring to a set of new laws enacted by majority Republican state legislatures, most notably in Arkansas, targeting trans youth. One law bars gender-affirming medical care. Another bans participation in public school and college sports. A bill forcing schools to only identify trans children by birth certificates failed, along with several pieces of other anti-trans legislation. One lawmaker who cited scripture characterizes trans youth as an abomination. Back at queer camp?
It definitely feels like I have a place to where I blend in instead of stand out, because at school, everyone has this heteronormative idea of society.
13-year-old Maximus Adkins, who identifies as he, they, it, protested at the state capitol.
Because they're trying to create what they believe is a perfect America. They're trying to correct something that they don't understand. They're afraid. They try to tell us who we are, and that doesn't make any sense. Don't tell me who I am when you know nothing about me.
Parent Ashley Churchman is volunteering at the camp.
Actually, right after all of that legislation was going through, I remember calling Clint Schneckloth in tears, and within the next day or two, he got back with me about this idea for a queer camp. In the hopes that we could honestly give these kids something to look forward to. With all the negativity and all of the hate that was being targeted toward queer youth and specifically trans youth in our state, it was starting to feel a little bit hopeless. And I have a kiddo that's already had some mental health struggles and attempted suicide, so a safe space like this for kids is not only a beautiful thing, it can truly be life-saving. It's so much more to me than just a fun camp.
After word of queer camp being organized spread on Facebook, Pastor Schneckloth was heavily trolled. As a consequence, this first year, he's arranged for camp to be discreetly secure and professionally surveilled, ensuring that the children, volunteers, and staff are safe and free to have all kinds of fun. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
A study released today from the American Heart Association finds transgendered people have higher rates of heart disease. The study reports discrimination and stress are very much linked to these health disparities. This morning, we talked with Dr. Gary Berner, the chief medical officer at Community Clinic, about the study. He says there are things the medical community can do and discusses to make medical experiences for transgendered people better.
I think there absolutely is. You know, I think I still feel fairly new in the healthcare world. Graduated medical school in 2012, but even that recent time, you know, there really wasn't a significant focus on transgender health while going through medical school, or really even going through residency. I think that was starting to become more of a conversation. So even being, I still feel relatively new in the medical world. Some additional training that I'm having to take on now. You know, this is additional learning that I'm having to take on now. So I think having the medical community just take that step to be aware, including this in curriculums and conversations of while in medical school. And then for those that aren't in medical school any longer, like myself, making sure that this is a part of medical conferences and our medical journals, and, you know, taking that step. And so I think it's really important for the American Heart Association to highlight, you know, these pieces, because now this is going to further increase that conversation, make it more likely for this to be a part of medical journals and conferences and things that we use to continue our own education. As a whole, I think the healthcare world is not wanting to go to work. I don't have any colleagues that are wanting to go to work today and make life more difficult for anyone, in a, you know, including a transgender person. So I do think we have a welcoming community, but there are very likely unintentional consequences happening. You know, not recognizing that, not asking a person their preferred pronoun can have a negative health impact. You know, not recognizing that your intake form only having an option for male and female and not a transgender option or a blank option or a, you know, or a choose not to disclose at this time option could add stress and could make it less likely that that person wants to come back for further health care at your clinic.
Any one of us can find a reason to not go to the doctor. We're too busy. I don't want to go in because I've gained 15 pounds since the last. You know, we can. Humans are great at making excuses, and that's when, you know, it's relatively easy. Any bit of advice for someone who is transgendered or has a transgendered loved one in their life that might be reticent and might be reluctant to go see a doctor? That you could share just to say, you know what, it's in your best interest to get to see a good doctor?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think what is happening is there is better recognition now in the healthcare world of this history of healthcare, of healthcare workers, healthcare professionals having a phobia towards transgender or actively discriminating. I think there is more recognition of that, and there are steps in the healthcare community to then make these changes. I think you have data reports like this American Heart Association report coming out, and that's what physicians and healthcare leaders follow. So I think we're taking the opportunity to listen and learn, and I think clinics are changing. I can't speak for all clinics, but I know at Community Clinic, you know, we've made lots of changes to try to be more accommodating and more understanding. Adjusting our electronic medical record to better accommodate preferred pronouns and preferred genders, adjusting our intake forms. You know, this is so simple, and it's almost embarrassing that you have to think to do this. But just asking preferred names, just making sure that we're not having to follow, just because it was something on a birth certificate, that we ask each patient, you know, what their preferred name is at that visit. And so just steps, and that we, that the healthcare world, I think, has a better recognition and are doing a better job. Let me make sure we say better. We're not by no means perfect to have a better recognition of the history, and that we're working to be more accommodating and make those changes. So I sure hope, and I'll specifically speak for Community Clinic, I just really, really would hope that our changes, our training, and a better awareness are making for a much better experience for a transgender person. But that we're also wanting to listen.
Dr. Gary Berner is the chief medical officer at Community Clinic. He talked with us this morning about a report released today from the American Heart Association regarding health disparities for transgendered people. We'll hear more from our conversation on Weekend Ozarks at Large. That's Sunday morning at 9 on KUAF.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten, in part, by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. Waiting in the Wigs, a drag benefit for Arkansas Public Theater, is this Thursday night from 7:30 to 10 p.m. at Moonbrock Pub in downtown Rogers. Tickets to this evening of drag queen entertainment with an after-show dance party are available at arkansaspublictheater.org or at the door starting at 6 p.m.
This is Ozarks at Large. Early voting is underway in a special election in Cave Springs that's asking voters to consider approving the annexation of nearly 2,800 acres into the city. Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda has more.
About 5,000 acres are currently within city limits, and annexing the unincorporated land would increase that by more than 50%. Cave Springs Mayor Randall Noblett says there are a number of factors that have contributed to this annexation vote. One is the city has received requests for water and sewer services to that area for some time.
You can't provide services if you can't secure the service area. If I go out there and spend additional money to allow for the growth of services into that area, and then one of the other cities around us goes in eventually and annexes it, they could put their services and tell us that, you know, that's their service area. We're not going to be able to expand. And all of the expansion that we paid for and up front would be for naught.
Benton County is expected to experience exponential growth in the coming years. So the city of Cave Springs is planning for that by implementing utility service expansion and improved public safety services. In November 2019, a sales tax was approved to build a new fire station, expand the city's water system west of Highway 112, and expand the city's sewer system to the Northwest Arkansas Conservation Authority along Highway 264 from Osage Creek to Little Osage. Sage Creek. The water and sewer system expansion extends to significant portions of the proposed annexation area. Officials say the expansion provides both systems the capacity to serve the existing city limits and the future needs of the proposed annexation area.
It's part of comprehensive planning. When you have the ability to provide the services, our engineers were involved and determined that the area could be served reasonably easily off of what we're putting in. And you're able to, and you're getting requests for those services, then that's the appropriate time to do it. And so that's what we're in the process of doing.
Mayor Noblett says when he was on the city's planning commission in 2002, Cave Springs had about 1,150 people. He anticipates that number will grow to more than 6,000 when official census numbers are released later this year. Around 200 residences are located within the annexation area, so Noblett estimates roughly 550 people will be impacted by this vote. If annexation is approved, these residents' taxes would change, but Noblett says it would be for the better. The city of Cave Springs has a city property tax of 2.75 mills, which is lower than the rates in Bentonville, Rogers, Springdale, and Highfill. Also, being within city limits means those taxes will be directed to more local projects.
On your property taxes, the county collects 3 mills of road tax. That 3 mil road tax is used anywhere from Siloam Springs to Gateway, all across the county. when you are a city within the county, within the city limits, the property taxes that are collected there, the county takes 1.5 mills and allocates the other 1.5 mills to the city. So then your property taxes, the road taxes, half of them will stay local.
The Cave Springs special election is the 5th election and 4th special election in Benton County this year, and more are on the way. Benton County Election Coordinator Kimberly Dennison says Garfield and Pea Ridge have special elections scheduled for September 14th, and the Bentonville school election is set for November 2nd.
It's an off election year, but in all honesty, I don't know what an off election year is. Since I've been doing this, this is just normal for me, honestly. And it's usually one right after another. It's really hard for us to find vacation time in my office because we are constantly doing elections, it seems like. So it's pretty normal.
Dennison says fees for a special election like the Cave Springs one cost anywhere from $8,000 to $10,000.
Biggest factors that play into the differences are the publication costs, it seems like, and just how many pieces of supplies are used while you're out there and how many absentee ballots go out, that kind of thing.
Registered voters living within Cave Springs city limits, as well as those living in the proposed annexation area, are eligible to vote in the special election. Dennison says poll workers can assist voters who are unsure if they live within the boundaries of the proposed annexation area.
The people that are eligible to vote in this election, they will automatically pull up in the tablet when you go to sign in. If your name is not there, the poll workers are instructed to call the county clerk's office to verify for sure that they are not in that area, and then we'll inform them that they're in that area. If somebody really insists that, hey, I am in that area, we'll give them a provisional ballot to vote. And we'll do some deeper research into it once we get that provisional ballot back to the office to determine whether or not they really were eligible.
Early voting is underway, and registered voters can cast their ballots from 8 a.m. to 4:30 p.m. at the county clerk's offices, Bentonville and Rogers locations, today, tomorrow, and Monday. On Tuesday, Election Day, polls will be open from 7:30 a.m. to 7:30 p.m. at Lakeview Baptist Church. For additional information about the special election, including a map of the proposed annexation area, visit cavespringsar.gov. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Any story you hear on Ozarks at Large is shareable easily. Just go to ozarksatlarge.com, find the link associated with the story or interview you heard that you want to share, and use that to share through email or social media.
Welcome to the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report. I'm Paul Gatling. On today's program, a discussion about what the future may look like politically for Asa Hutchinson. Talk Business and Politics Editor-in-Chief Roby Brock has that interview with Andrew DeMillo, who is the longtime Capitol correspondent for the Associated Press in Arkansas. They discuss what might be next for the term-limited Arkansas governor. Plus, what does the future look like for Arkansas's post-pandemic economy? Bentonville think tank Heartland Forward has released a report this week that offers guidance to Arkansas policymakers seeking to strengthen the state's economic rebound and growth as it recovers from the COVID-19 pandemic. That's coming your way next on today's Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report.
Support for the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report is provided by the Arkansas State Chamber of Commerce and Associated Industries of Arkansas. The Chamber's mission is to promote a pro-business, free enterprise agenda and prevent legislation, regulation, and rules that hinder business. ArkansasStateChamber.com. Arkansas Blue Cross and Blue Shield. For more than 70 years, Arkansas Blue Cross and Blue Shield has used its knowledge and compassion to create healthcare solutions for individuals and businesses. More information at ArkansasBlueCross.com. First Security is proud to be only in Arkansas. They offer smart solutions for personal and business banking, plus convenient services and community investment. First Security, member FDIC, equal housing lender.
Arkansas Economic Recovery Strategy was released this week by researchers at Heartland Forward. That is the Walton-supported think tank in Bentonville. The study was commissioned by Governor Asa Hutchinson's Arkansas Economic Recovery Task Force, which is chaired by Stuart Walton of Bentonville. Researchers say the strategy is not intended to be a detailed economic development blueprint or replace existing plans, but it can build upon those and guide how Arkansas can adapt and capitalize on opportunities presented by the COVID-19 pandemic. We've got more on that story up on our website, and you can also find a link to that 77-page report, and that's at nwabusinessjournal.com. Governor Asa Hutchinson was first elected governor in 2014 and was reelected in 2018, but term limits will keep him from seeking the office a third time in 2022. So what does Hutchinson's future look like? To discuss that topic, Roby Brock spoke with Andrew DeMillo, who is the Associated Press's longtime Capitol correspondent in Arkansas. DeMillo wrote a major national story a couple of weeks ago on the 70-year-old governor and his future prospects nationally. DeMillo says that any sort of projection about Hutchinson's place in the GOP will mainly be defined by this question. What kind of Republican is Asa Hutchinson?
Description he's used is pragmatic conservatism, and it's kind of goes back to, you know, past 30 or 40 years that he's been with the party here, where some of his politics in a lot of ways are not that different from Trump, but he has been very cautious about, you know, some of Trump's rhetoric and some of his policies. And you know, like we talked about, you know, a lot of the attention he's been getting this year nationally has been for distancing himself from not just Trump, but also kind of Arkansas's Trumpian turn is kind of the description that we used.
It's a different style is what it is. There may be some similar politics, but the style is a little bit different.
Yeah.
He has critics and supporters. In the piece that you did, Senator Trent Garner, state senator from El Dorado, calls him a relic. GOP strategist Whit Ayers calls him refreshing. Do you get the sense that Governor Hutchinson is decisively trying to determine what path he is, or do you think he's kind of feeling his way through this?
I think in a lot of ways he's at least unintentionally trying to feel his way through this. And I think, you know, looking at next year's election may get kind of a better idea of kind of how does he fit in with the party, not just in Arkansas, but nationally. He's starting a political action committee. He's taking on a national role, you know, chairing the National Governors Association. And in a lot of ways, if we see his message kind of resonate with people, that may give us an idea of kind of what path does he have forward, because he's made it clear he's not ruling out, you know, something else in his future. I think if we look at the midterm elections next year and we see there not really being room for kind of his brand of conservatism, and the only, you know, litmus test really being, the Trump test, that may kind of determine that there may not be a path forward for him, at least in terms on the national stage.
You referenced he's about to become the chairman of the National Governors Association, a very prestigious and high-profile post. It will increase his visibility that has already been pretty visible on a lot of national programs here. And he's a popular draw because he doesn't always say the predictable things, I think, in that respect right there. What's your expectation for how he might conduct his business in this NGA role?
Yeah, I think based on the way he's talking about a lot of things right now, you know, he seems more apt to be talking about kind of dry policy issues than kind of identity politics type things. You know, one thing he's talked about that he wants to focus on is his computer science in public schools, which is not kind of a headline grabbing kind
of
thing.
It's not super sexy.
Yeah.
But it can be to some extent.
Yeah, and I think healthcare is another issue, especially with Arkansas, putting in another waiver for its Medicaid expansion. Yeah, I think that's an area we're going to see him talking about things. A lot of the areas that you see kind of Trump grabbing attention, and kind of these other red state governors, you know, Ron DeSantis, Kristi Noem, who are kind of trying to carve out a path kind of similar to Trump, kind of branding themselves in the same way. I don't think you're going to see this the same thing with him. And also with COVID, you know, he's dealing with an increasingly just ominous situation here. I think you're going to see him talking more about the challenges of dealing with low vaccination rate and dealing with rising cases in, you know, very conservative state where there's a lot of vaccine resistance right now.
Where do you think Governor Hutchinson goes politically? He's term limited. He doesn't seem to be like he's going to step into that U.S. Senate race unless something dramatic changes there. I mean, is he eyeing a presidential run, you think, in 2024?
He's very coy about it when he's asked about it. Even, you know, I think on CNN he was asked about it again yesterday. But he's kind of in a different position from what we've seen past two governors. Governor Beebe made it very clear he was not running for office again. Governor Huckabee, made no bones about it that he was interested in something on the national stage and had book out and had visits to early states. You don't see that with Hutchinson, but he also makes it clear that he's open to something. I think, kind of like I said, I think next year may really determine that in terms of what path is there forward for him.
Hutchinson's history in Arkansas's politics dates back to the 1980s when Ronald Reagan appointed him as a U.S. attorney. He went on to chair Arkansas's Republican Party and was elected to Congress before serving as head of the Drug Enforcement Administration and later as a federal Homeland Security official in George W. Bush's administration. There is more of that conversation between Roby Brock and AP Capitol correspondent Andrew DeMillo online, and you can watch that on our sister website at talkbusiness.net. Some other recent headlines this week, Rogers investment firm BD Capital Group closed a $37 million deal to buy the Grand Village at Clear Creek Retirement Community in Fayetteville. The facility is 73% occupied and includes 109 luxury independent living apartments surrounded by 16 cottages. And Arkansas remains the nation's top rice-producing state. Arkansas's rice export value hit $722 million in 2019, according to new data released this week by the USDA. California and Louisiana round out the top three. For more business news reported each and every day, you can visit us online at both nwabusinessjournal.com and at talkbusiness.net. I'm Paul Gatling, and that's the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report. Until next time, thanks for listening.
This is a Thursday edition of Ozarks at Large. So, with me is Timothy Dennis, who is going to enlighten us about live music for the next several days. Oh, and Timothy, welcome back from vacation.
Hey, thank you, sir. Thank you, sir. I don't know how enlightening I can be, but I just have information, you know?
That'll work.
Okay, let's start with tonight. Abby Pierce will be on stage at Mojo's East. She's a local singer-songwriter. She'll be on stage for a few hours tonight.
I wonder, can it be repaired? Or are we victims of despair? Well, a wise woman once told me the key to happiness is to wake up every morning and don't worry about the rest.
I live close to there, so I should know the answer to this, and maybe you don't either. The music is inside or outside? Because they have that outside area there.
You know, I'm not entirely sure. Because, I mean, you know, the original Mojos, they have an outside area too. And more often than not, the music's inside as well. Inside. So I honestly don't know, Kyle.
Sounds like a field trip for me.
It does sound like a field trip. You are closest, so report back to us, all right?
Will do.
That show tonight at Mojos East, it starts at 7 p.m. Okay, let's move on to tomorrow night. Friday night, it's George's Majestic Lounge. They obviously have a happy hour, as they do almost every Friday night. This week, they're featuring blues with Earl and Them and Buddy Shootin' the Motivators.
Tried some self-hypnosis, but I can't remember why. I need some...
Oh, My, that's a heck of a double bill.
And that's a happy hour bill, no less.
Right, right.
Tickets for that happy hour show are $8. Gets underway at 6 o'clock. Again, that's tomorrow night at George's in Fayetteville. Tomorrow night, the late show at George's is going to feature a set of electronic dance music with Dirt Monkey and John Teal. Tickets for that show are $20. Gets underway at 9:30 p.m.
That's why it's the late show.
Exactly. Moving on, other music in Fayetteville tomorrow night. Prairie Street Live is going to have Cromgrass and Rachel Ammons. It's kind of an evening of string music. Rachel Ammons, of course, is a local legend on fiddle and several other instruments.
Next year or two, or the rest of her life, the doctors say.
They're a quasi-electric genre-hopping string band that's comprised of members from Deep Sequence and Monk is King.
Mm.
Tickets for that show at Prairie Street Live are $15. You get our way at 5 o'clock tomorrow night. Moving up the road to Springdale, Shirley's Bar is welcoming back live music with a hard rock show featuring Aria, Endfall, and Miss Misery. Tickets for that show are $5. Gets underway at 9 o'clock tomorrow night. Again, that's at Shirley's Bar in Springdale. The Gravel Bar at Eureka Springs is going to have an aptly named band called Front Porch. They're kind of a bluegrass band.
Well, one thing I know, when they lay me in the ground,
that show gets underway at 7 o'clock Friday night. Again, that's at the Gravel Bar in Eureka Springs. Okay, moving on to Saturday night. Back at Kingfish in Fayetteville, they're going to have a rock and roll show featuring Elephantom and The Rumors. Rock and roll bands.
Sure are.
That show gets underway at 9 o'clock Saturday night. Again, that's the patio at Kingfish in downtown Fayetteville. Okay, moving up to Benton County Saturday night. The Momentary in Bentonville is going to have their next Live on the Green series featuring Katie Waters with Bang, B-A-A-N-G. It's a mixture of R&B, soul, and hip-hop, and it's presented by Anthony Ball.
Oh, great.
They pay attention when I speak my mind. Set the tone without even trying. God chose me to see, so I can lead the blind. Songs like Psalms, my palm right. You read the rhymes, highway to heaven. I'm here, cause I ain't read the signs. Oh well, we gon' figure out. Kids eat free, if you want me, count them figures out. Lost so many loves, I can't count them on my fingers now. Fell asleep in Dally, woke up Cali, we are in and out. Made a quick fold, time to go, yeah, we in and out. Rims like the rent cycle, clean when they spinning out. How you speak down on the main, but you on the couch. Eating off your mom and them, listen.
That is a free show on the Momentary Lawn, and it gets underway at 7:30 p.m. Saturday night up in Bentonville. Also happening Saturday, the next concert in the KUAF Summer Jazz Concert Series and the Crystal Bridges Forest Concert Series is happening, and that is going to feature the Sons of Brazil.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. That'll be a great show.
I saw them great the show. Last time Robert Ginsberg had them in Northwest Arkansas for the Summer Jazz Series, maybe 6 years ago. It was at 21C, yeah. Regardless, but they were an absolute treat.
Yeah.
Tickets for that show are $12, $10 if you're a Crystal Bridges member. If you're 18 and under, you get in for free. That begins at 7 p.m. Saturday night at Crystal Bridges in Bentonville. Then moving on to Sunday, the Momentary is going to have an afternoon of jazz on their courtyard featuring Jerron Marshall with the Jake Herzog Trio. That gets underway at 4:30 p.m. Again, that is in the courtyard at the Momentary Sunday afternoon in Bentonville. And then Sunday afternoon in Eureka Springs, Patty Steele is going to be at the Gravel Bar. Plays clarinet, guitar, a lot of other instruments. She's a great songwriter. Should be a good time.
I wanna drive around in my car, drive downtown to my local bar. I miss my family and all of my friends, and every single hug I get from
again, that show gets underway at 4 o'clock Sunday afternoon at the Gravel Bar in Eureka Springs. And that'll just about do us for the weekend.
Well, that's I like it. You could do all day and all night Sunday. And that's not always the case.
And you get a nice mixture. You get some R&B, you get some soul, you get some jazz, you get some country, some singer-songwriter. What else do you need?
Well, that'll just about do it. All right. Timothy Dennis joins us every Thursday to give us live music updates. Timothy, thank you very much.
Thank you, Kyle.
Todas las tardes en Granada, todas las tardes se
This is Leah Uribe, Associate Professor at the University of Arkansas Music Department, expanding our musical boundaries with Sound Perimeter. We open Sound Perimeter today with American composer George Crumb's Todas las tardes en Granada, Todas las tardes muere un niño. Each afternoon in Granada, a child dies. Each afternoon. This song is part of the cycle Ancient Voices of Children that sets fragments of text by Spanish poet Federico García Lorca to Crumb's unique instrumentation. In this case, soprano, marimba, toy piano, harmonica, harp, suspended cymbal, and voices. Crumb says of this piece, written in 1970, quote, in Ancient Voices of Children, I have sought musical images that enhance and reinforce the powerful yet strangely haunting imagery of Lorca's poetry. I feel that the essential meaning of this poetry is concerned with the most primary things, life, death, love, the smell of the earth, the sounds of the wind and the sea, end quote. Let us listen to the end of George Crumb's song, Todas las tardes en Granada, Todas las tardes se muere un niño. Each afternoon in Granada, a child dies each afternoon, and its mournful yet tranquil setting.
Thank you.
That was George Crumb's Todas las tardes en Granada, todas las tardes se muere un niño, based on a text by Spanish poet Federico García Lorca. Sergei Rachmaninoff, Russian composer, wrote Vocalise in 1915 as the last of his 14 songs, Opus 34. This song is written for high voice, soprano or tenor, and it has no words. Instead, it calls for the use of a vowel chosen by the singer. We are listening to Sergei Rachmaninoff's Vocalise, interpreted by Ilona Dobnik, soprano, and Catherine Sturck, pianist, from a 2011 live performance at the Loch Shiel Festival. Usually, we associate songs to the meaning expressed in their words, but in this wordless song, the meaning is open to our own interpretation. I first heard this piece as a teenager in its violin and piano version, and since I always hear longing, passion, and with adulthood, I have added a great deal of nostalgia. What does Vocalise say to you? Enjoy the rest of this beautiful piece while listening to your voice. This is Lia Uribe, Associate Professor at the University of Arkansas Music Department, expanding our musical boundaries with Sound Perimeter. Oh,
Tomorrow on Ozarks at Large, Janelle George, the recipient of the Illuminating Black Lives Fellowship from the Writers' Colony of Derry Hollow, discusses writing and more. She'll lead a workshop at the Fayetteville Public Library Saturday afternoon. Our conversation, recorded yesterday in Eureka Springs, on tomorrow's Ozarks at Large at noon and 7 p.m., hosted tomorrow by Antoinette Grajeda.
The Bentonville Film Festival returns August 2nd through the 8th with both virtual and safe in-person events throughout NWA, featuring world premiere film screenings, in-depth conversations with storytellers, and more. BFF is the only mission-driven film festival focused on championing women and diverse voices in all forms of entertainment media. Passes on sale now at bentonvillefilm.org. Support for KUAF comes from the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal, now featuring media and marketing, television and radio, plus local business news from Northwest Arkansas. Subscriptions and information at 725-0394 or nwabusinessjournal.com. KUAF is supported by Hendrix College, offering engaged learning by linking classrooms to the world and developing career skills throughout its curriculum. Hendrix graduates pursue medical, law, and other advanced degrees, preparing students to lead lives of accomplishment. Hendrix.edu/connect for more information.
This is 91.3 KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Spring Valley. 91.3 KUAF is a listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas. Contributors to our show today included Jacqueline Froelich, Antoinette Grajeda, Timothy Dennis, and Leah Uribe. Today's show and today's Sound Perimeter produced by Timothy Dennis. Today's Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report with Paul Gatling is part of our continuing partnership with Talk Business and Politics. You can learn more at talkbusiness.net and the Business Journal Report, produced by Stephanie Brock. Our theme is titled The First Hurrah. It's written and performed by Daryl Sean. Tomorrow's edition of Ozarks at Large at noon and 7 p.m., brand new, and it will be hosted by Antoinette Grajeda. I'll return Sunday morning at 9 with Weekend Ozarks at Large, and then Monday at noon, we'll start another week of brand new daily editions of Ozarks at Large. You can listen to us as a podcast for free. Just subscribe either through KUAF.com or any of the major podcast distributors. You can also ask your smart speaker to please play Ozarks at Large to hear the most recent edition of our show. Please take care of yourself. Be careful. We're not out of the pandemic woods yet. I'm Kyle Kellums. Thanks for listening.